Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. The weather has been very nice lately, so I hope you guys are outside enjoying the sun, because I did hear that there will be rain throughout the month of March, which doesn't sound exciting. But at the same time, rain is what makes us appreciate the sun. I'm sure that we can all agree on that, I hope. But yeah, today's episode, I'll be coming back with another movie review. This time is also in the genre of romance. I guess a little bit of drama as well, but we'll be joined with a lovely guest as well. But before we get started, let's get through the station ID and a promo, and we'll get right into the episode. So I'll see you guys in a couple minutes.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
What do you love, and what do you love about it? My name is Ewan, and with I Love You Hour, I want to know. Come join me bi-weekly Tuesdays at 6 p.m. to discuss music and the stories we connect to it, either in person, on the phone, or through messages at I Love You Hour on Instagram. That's I-L-U-V-U Hour on Instagram, or through email at iluvhour@gmail.com. If you love sharing music and telling stories, listen to I Love You Hour bi-weekly at CITR 101.9. And remember, I love you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. Why don't we get right into it? I'm excited for this movie review. So, my guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, I'm Raf. My pronouns are they, them. I'm an artist and writer, and I'm currently in the CITR Power and Voice program. So our cohort will be releasing our projects in the middle of April sometime.
Awesome. Do you mind getting a little bit into what this project, or what is this, like a project or like an organization that you're in with CITR?
Yeah, so this is CITR's Power and Voice podcast incubator program. And it's a program that basically teaches you all the basics you need to know to get into podcasting. As far as I know, the program came together for the express reason of making podcasting more accessible and less daunting to get into for beginners. I'd never worked with audio before this program, so it's been quite a journey.
No, for me too. I have zero prior experience with radio until I started Lean In with Jeff. So, but anyways, you know what? Let's get into this. So the movie that Raf chose for us is called Past Lives. And I want to begin with asking, why this movie? Was there a reason for this movie choice? And is this genre something that you watch often?
So one of the reasons why I chose this movie is because it was kind of the only romantic movie that I'd seen recently, other than my, you know, yearly marathon of terrible holiday rom-com movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it stuck with me. I watched it in December, and it's just rotating in the back of my mind since. And, you know, I don't know if I could say it's my favorite movie, but it's definitely one I would easily recommend, just for the way the ways in which it gets you to question a lot of the things that we sort of take for granted in the way we talk about love in our culture. And I think it also touches on a lot about, like, identity for, you know, children of immigrant parents. So that was an interesting, very, like, personally, like, connecting aspect of that as well. There's just so much to talk about in this movie. And on top of that, it's absolutely beautifully shot. They filmed it on actual film, on 35 millimeter. And I think it makes a difference, you know, when movies are filmed on film.
I don't even know that sort of detail. So is the 35 millimeter kind of what's the default for what you should use when filming a film? Or is it like a different size? What exactly is that?
You know, I'm not sure about the exact details, the nitty-gritty of it. I think 35 is a pretty standard format for film. It's just that nowadays most movies are filmed digitally.
Mm.
So I think the quality of color and texture is, like, very apparent as you're watching this movie. At least it was to me.
Yeah. Why don't we just get into this again? But the opening of the movie, if I remember correctly, the bar scene. And it begins with, like, these random strangers that we do not see imagining and assuming what the relationship is between the main characters of the film, which is Nora, Hezhung, and Arthur sitting in front of them. We don't know who these people are, the strangers who are narrating the situation. And they're kind of imagining, you know, what these three people are to each other. I found that a very interesting way to start off the film, especially because we don't even till the end know who these people are and why it was that specific scene in their life that was shot to kind of start off the film. What did you think about this opening?
Oh, I love that opening. It was, yeah, definitely a creative way of getting us into the movie. And, you know, I think, so an impression I got, especially in my second watch of this, was it kind of felt like I was watching a movie version of a personal narrative essay. And so this opening scene, to me, from that framework, I would say acts as a introduction paragraph. And in some ways, introduces the larger question that I think underlies all the other thematic explorations throughout the movie, which is, what is love? What are relationships? You know, we get these strangers who are playing that, looking at other strangers and guessing their relationships, who they are, and they can't get a read on our three characters. And as we go through the movie, I think it becomes, like, abundantly clear, like, why? Because the emotions that these characters feel for each other, especially Hezhung and Nora, they're never defined clearly. So frustrating.
Yeah.
But, you know, very real, I think. Especially, like, I don't know, I'm always hearing about the prevalence of situationships these days. And this felt kind of like a precursor to that. You know, in one of the things that Hesong says when Nora asks for a break in their communication, he says, "It's not why am I feeling this way? Yeah. It's not like we were dating." And I'm just like, bro.
when I actually heard that from Hesong, I wonder what Nora thought when he said that. I wonder if Nora, in her mind, was like, wait, I know we're not dating, but I thought this was more than just a friendship. But then I guess like Nora kind of like brushes it off and says, yeah, like, I'm sorry. She keeps saying I'm sorry, which is weird. And then, yeah, that scene was weird because when he said that, as an audience, I'm like, wait, you guys aren't? You know, in a way, although it wasn't explicit. But then for him to say that kind of brings them back to reality for what their relationship is, what it is and what it's not. But yeah, I guess you can continue on.
Yeah, like he says we're not even dating. And it's true, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's on like the social level, because things like girlfriend, boyfriend, yes, it's like a personal label between to define your relationship for you, but it's also the label, a label that acts as, well, all labels are social technology. It's a label that helps you and your relationship be legible, right, to others. And so with Hesong and Nora, especially in that, the fact that they're long distance, I think probably like lends to the fact of like a barrier of like dating, you know? So like they don't really get a space in which they exist together in a larger community or society. And so I don't think there's like that pressure to name it as well. And I think all those, like, in the fact, you know, the fact that they're long distance, the fact that they have very different life paths that they've decided on, I think all these kind things kind of can build up as a barrier or as fears, I'm not sure, to that, like, deter someone as, what's the word? Reserved,
yeah,
as Hesong, to be able to like commit to this feeling that he's feeling, you know, it's clear that he feels the romance and the love, but he finds himself incapable of committing to it. And I think that's the thing that Nora was, like, really frustrated with, was that, you know, she has all these feelings and emotions in her too, right? They're sharing these feelings. But for her, she's like, the feeling isn't enough, and I want to see you in person. And she wants these feelings to, I think, lead to some kind of action that Hesong is clearly not willing to take. You know, he's like making excuses as to why he can't visit her. And I think the really kind of frustrating thing for me was like that when he was giving these excuses or like saying, well, these are the choices I want to make for my life, right? He never seems quite happy or like I couldn't feel that conviction of like, I'm choosing this because I choose my life, and this life that I'm choosing is like the most important to me. Whereas for Nora, it's like she chooses to step away from their relationship because she was like, if there's no way forward in our whatever's happening between us, I have to be able to pursue my life, which this relationship, the format of this relationship with Hesong is just not fulfilling. is not supporting, nor is his wishy-washiness. Yeah.
I think you have, first of all, that was a wonderful response. There were so many great points that you put up. To go with them in order, starting with the bar scene, I think that the significance of the bar scene and that ambiguity that it presents it as kind of foreshadows and defines what the relationship is, what is going on with Haesung and Nora, in terms of there is no definitive answer with what is what they are, in terms of whether it's an intimate relationship or if it's just a friendship. There's just so many lines that are blurred throughout the film, and I think that's the whole point of it. And then going back to Haesung, now that you mention it, when I first watched the movie, I've only watched it once. I don't know why I said that. But
because you'll be watching it again.
I'll be watching it again. But I saw Nora and Haesung being the protagonists, the co-protagonists of the film. But now that you mention it, I feel like that Haesung might have been the protagonist and maybe the one that not deserves, but needs more attention. Because I thought it was a mutual thing where kind of Nora and Haesung are reluctant to define their relationship and pursue it further. But at the same time, there are many occasions where we can see that Nora is the one making those difficult decisions, whether it's beginning with cutting off the connection with Haesung, with, you know, all the calls that they used to make, and then her continuously pursuing her dreams, having goals and ambitions that seem to serve her happiness as well, and what she's going for. She meets people. She eventually met Arthur, a fellow writer in the residency that she was at. She seems quite happy with that. You know, they don't seem to have any issues. But then Haesung, I thought that Nora, because it's framed in the beginning where Nora was the one who initiated to meet up with Haesung, but it seems like Haesung was the one who's been searching for her. And so I guess that goes to show that Haesung has always had this desire and this love towards Nora, but was afraid, or I'm not quite sure why he was so hesitant about it. And when he eventually did end up getting into contact with her, he wasn't, like you said, willing to make the next step. And so I think that was, in a way, thinking back, was just such a difficult thing to look back on, because as an audience, I always was willing that they would end up together. But at the same time, now this goes back to the theme of, you know, soulmates and what it means to just, you know, to be the perfect match. There's just so polar opposite people, I think. And like you said, Haesung doesn't seem to have any happiness in his life. It's quite plateaued. We don't get a lot of information on what he does, what makes him tick. All he does is, there's just scenes where he's just with his family, either having breakfast or his friends just drinking. And then now we see Nora, who's actually doing something and working towards her goal. And I think that kind of goes to show what kind of person they each are. And so I don't know, you know, I think we all have this thought of, you know, soulmates kind of always being there, but we weren't able to notice it. And I think that's what makes soulmates so special, is because it's not like, for me at least, it's not kind of like an immediate, like, meet cute almost. It's like they were always there, but we weren't able to recognize it. And when we do, it's like this fantastical realization. But I think in this case, it kind of redefines that term of soulmates and really just shows, you know, maybe something might seem a certain way, a certain angle, but then when you kind of rethink it, it might not be that way. So I guess what I want to ask next is, what do you think each of the characters wanted? Do you think they were both on kind of the same page with each other? And how do you think that affected their relationship as a whole, and how that kind of drove the movie?
Ooh, that's a good and dense question. I think, you know, by the end of the movie, they do come to the same page. I think Nora has a very clear idea of what she wants and how the things in her life, you know, support that. Like, I think, you know, I don't know if, like, Hyesung and Nora, like, could have worked in a way that, you know, supports each other mutually in their goals. You know, in the fact that she's married also to a writer, I think, creates a great, like, comparison, juxtaposition between Hyesung and Nora's life, you know? I think the fact that her husband is a writer helps really solidify or, like, anchor his position as like, this one side of her. But I think Hyesung is a lot more lost. I think he... It's so funny when you were, as you were, like, telling us, you know, what we get to see of Hyesung. And even Hyesung says, like, I'm just very average. I'm just a very normal guy. And Nora, when she talks about him to her husband, Arthur, she's like, he's so Korean. He's such a Korean guy. And yeah. He kind of gets, like, characterized as this stock character or stereotype of a Korean man, like a Korean man, as she says.
Yeah, that was an interesting remark, but continue on, yeah.
I
wonder why she actually said it like that. Do you think she was trying to make a point on him just being like this static person?
You know,
to be like a Korean, he's so Korean. I'm like, what? What does that mean?
I have Korean, definitely Korean. Used that phrase before.
Oh, really?
Korean. Yeah, there is a difference, you know. I, like, really resonated with Nora in terms of, like, when she was like, when I hang out with him, I both feel less Korean and more Korean.
That was a good, yes.
And I think that's, you know, it's all connected. It's like that Korean-ness for him, for Hyesung, he's like, he's in it.
Yeah.
He's like a fish inside the water.
Mm.
Whereas Nora is kind of, she's more amphibious, right? She can kind of see that Korean-ness from the outside, but at the same time, she's also not separate from it.
Mm.
I'm sorry. I think I got on a tangent and I lost my train of thought.
No, I mean, that's a great way. I think that was... Do you think that kind of cultural difference was what made everything so complicated? If Nora were to stay in Korea with Hyesung throughout her entire life, do you think it might have worked out? Because I think that's a lot of the things that make me wonder when I think about this movie is all these different scenarios that not just me, but it seems like Hyesung and Nora are kind of doing this as well, is what if this happened? What if I didn't go to New York? What if I did go to New York? And all these different scenarios that they draw on, like, these what ifs. Do you ever think about that? And does that ever make you question the overall theme of the movie of what love is and what it is to meet, you know, the one?
Are you asking if I think about, like, their relationship to what ifs or just what ifs in romance in general?
Both, actually. That's a great question. I'd say both.
Yeah, I think, you know, the excitement of Hyesung returning and their story is the possibilities. And, you know, the beauty and the tragedy of it is that we and they never get to see what possibilities are true and what are not. And I think with Nora, like, she wanted to go to Korea or wanted to see him to really really get a sense of which what ifs are viable and which what ifs are not. And so, you know, by the time he sees her again for the last time, there's no more, all these what ifs are simply what ifs, you know? And that is the beauty, aesthetic beauty and tragedy of this relationship, or these kinds of relationships, I think. It's possibility is I think the driving force of like eroticism and romance, and like, you know, I think a lot of daydreams, or you know, a lot of our media, you know, like fanfic and like shipping culture, and it's all these like, it's about the possibilities and exploring that creates the excitement, I think, of like relationships, romantic or not. And I think this is also why Arthur feels that insecurity, which is, he and Nora don't have a lot of what ifs in their own relationship. They might have what ifs in their careers, but they've settled, right? And like, you know, as he tells their story of like, oh, they moved in together because it made sense, and then they got married because of a green card.
I thought the green card, do you think that was a joke? I thought that was kind of like a semi-joke.
Oh, no, I think that was real.
Oh, really? Because I was like, that's not a very romantic thing to say, like, just because you got with someone because of the green card. So I thought that was kind of like a semi-joke. And then, like, the whole fact that, yeah, just like...
I think that's a very real situation that a lot of people experience, where, you know, even if you do want to get married to this person eventually, you might get married early, like she said she did, because of legal reasons. And I think that really points to the fact of how much marriage is a legal thing.
Yeah.
And
like almost like a business.
Yeah. I mean, historically, it's been a business transaction, right? And I think that structure still is there. You know, that's why people still call it the institution of marriage, right? And so we've come to a place in our culture with like heteronormity and stuff where we merge the idea of marriage with like romance, and marriage being like the end goal or the pinnacle. But I think it's worthwhile to disentangle our ideas of marriage and romance from each other to get a clearer picture of each, I think. You know, I don't think a loving couple has to get married. But at the same time, marriage, because we live in a society, marriage affords us the ability to access, you know, certain benefits, certain realities. Like, one of the reasons why gay marriage is so important, and you know, is because in our hospitals and things, we can't, like, you know, in certain situations, they'll only allow family to visit the patient, right? And if you're not married to your partner, they're legally not family, right? And so this is like a huge inequality, right? But at the same time, you know, being in queer spaces, you kind of can't hold on to marriage as like a virtue, basically. You kind of get to see how much it is tied to institutions, to structure, to our heteronormative society, you know? So I think it's a very complicated thing, marriage itself. Without even like bringing in the romance aspect of it, which we have to in this movie because it deals with romance. And honestly, Arthur is such a stand-up guy. Like, one of my favorite scenes is when Nora and Hesong walk up, and they Hesong and Arthur meet for the first time. And Arthur seeing these two standing next to each other, looking like the perfect power couple,
yeah.
right? And he's like, oh. Like his face, you see it. He's just like, oh. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, the image is so beautiful. And he talks like, your story is like, I can't compete with that story,
yeah.
right? And, you know, I don't know. Like, romance is a feeling, but how much of that feeling comes out of our actual, like, bodies and the reality and of this relationship, and how much of that comes from the stories we tell ourselves. And not just, like, of what happened, but the what-ifs, the what-if stories, right? And I think, you know, now that I say that, Hesong came to do what Nora wanted to do all those years ago, so like during their second time period together. He finally, like 12 years later, did what she wanted to do, which is come and see which stories reality is going to destroy and which ones will remain alive to fuel whatever relationship they have.
Yeah. So there's two things that I actually want to discuss from what you said. Number one, I think Arthur is such a significant character in this movie, and I think he plays a very, very important role. And this is kind of rolling to my next point is, first of all, what is it that made him so insecure and so not fulfilled with his relationship with Nora compared to her and Hesong? So kind of what is seen to be, I guess, like more valuable in a sense, more worthy of like that kind of fits into love and romance. And that connection between love and romance and kind of the societal views of, you know, that like fantasy that we all kind of dream of to meet someone. But before we get into that, let's get through some ads, PSAs, and some show promos, and we'll actually get a little bit more deeper into Arthur's character and kind of what it is about this relationship that kind of sparks this topic of what's more worthy, I guess. But I'll see you guys in a couple minutes.
Local voices matter. Yours, mine, the hosts on this community station. You know it, I know it. Now it's time for the government to support it. With your help, stations like this one will continue to do amazing things. It's called the Community Radio Initiative. Learn more at mycri.ca, and together we can make a difference for our community. Again, mycri.ca, because local voices are what shapes our neighborhoods.
Outside presents Lost in Paradise, featuring Sam Wallace performing at the Cobalt Cabaret on March 14th at 6 p.m. Head to showpass.com and look up We Outside to grab your tickets today.
Local voices matter. Yours, mine, the hosts on this community station. You know it, I know it. Now it's time for the government to support it. With your help, stations like this one will continue to do amazing things. It's called the Community Radio Initiative. Learn more at mycri.ca, and together we can make a difference for our community. Again, mycri.ca, because local voices are what shapes our neighborhoods.
All right, we are back. We'll get into it. So Arthur, great, great guy, I think. To give some context, Arthur meets Nora in a writing residency. They end up falling in love, and that's about it. You know, it's not that I don't appreciate the way that Arthur phrases his relationship with Nora. I really don't think that, like, the way that you meet someone, like, there's no measurement to what a certain way being more special to another. And I think that distinction is something that is shown throughout the movie, and kind of a very important point is that it seems that Hesong and Nora's history together and the way that they met each other and the relationship that they have is almost more special and seem to have more value than the way that Arthur and Nora met each other. And so that seems to be a mutual understanding with Arthur and how he views his relationship with Nora, despite the fact that he's literally married to her, and Nora and Hesong haven't even dated. But the fact that he still feels that sort of insecurity is just so interesting to me. So do you have any thoughts on that? Like, what is it that Arthur is so, he himself says, is scared about with Nora being friends with Hesong and supposedly literally meeting each other and talking with each other like every decade, like 12 years, 24 years. So, I guess that's kind of, I want to give you the floor on that.
Yeah, you know, because you've pointed out that they meet every 12 years, I think this is just a side note, but like Hesong, the name itself, you know, I don't know what the characters are, but as a word, it in Korean, it means comet. So he literally is a comet that comes back regularly after every 12 years.
That's so interesting, yeah.
But what is it about Arthur? You know, I think my mind, when you ask that, my mind goes to two places. And one is, Arthur's a writer. And I think it's not unexpected that he values story and narrative, right? And it is true that Nora and Hesong have like a more romantic, more like capital R romantic, like story, right? It's a sexier story than his story of his marriage and relationship to Nora, which kind of like flows very calmly, basically. It kind of sounds like a story where you just sort of stumble into where you are in life, right? And I think Hesong coming around, it's like a wake-up call of like, whoa, we've been like really like stable. And suddenly there's this thing that's like so exciting and so like beautiful and so full of emotion that it shakes a person's soul, right? And when you're in that kind of long married relationship, I think it's like very difficult and rare to, and I don't even know, is it possible to, like, you can't have that kind of soul shaking regularly, let's just say. And marriage generally is a very regular thing, right? And then I think the other place that my thoughts go to is the space and the distance. You know, when we see them at the bar, and Nora is sitting quite close to Arthur, right? Like, they're like this. Oh, sorry. They're like right next to each other. She's like leaned a little towards him, but he's behind her. And Hesong is in front of her, but there's this like big gap.
Yeah.
A gap between them. And like, obviously, she's more comfortable with Arthur. Usually, not in this situation. the discomfort is very real.
Yes.
Quite
uncomfortable for me to watch as well. I'm like,
when
they just started ranting with each other.
They're like telling each other the most romantic things
in
her
Korean.
Husband's right behind them. Yeah.
I just thought it was like a really awkward moment.
I'm like, ooh. Ooh.
Yeah, and it just went on for like,
yeah,
I'm assuming a long time until she went to the washroom, I think.
Yeah.
And I really love the fact, I think Haesung is a really great guy. I really appreciated the fact that he apologized, because I think that goes to show with, you know, who he is as a man and the respect that he has with Arthur and what he has with Nora. But yeah, it was a really weird scene.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Haesung thanking Arthur, and I really liked that Haesung was saying, this is Inyeon too.
Yeah.
And I mean, the funny part is, like, when Nora tells Arthur this, she's like, that's what Koreans tell each other to seduce you. And Haesung's like, this is Inyeon too. So there's that level of humor, I think. But it is really beautiful because they are Inyeon, right? Inyeon meaning, like, fate, like, destiny.
Yeah.
And I think that moment really highlights the fact that this movie is not necessarily a movie about romantic relationships. It's a movie about human relationships.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect way to put it. Yes.
Yeah, those are where my thoughts go. But what about you?
Yeah. So that was such a great way to put it. I went into the movie thinking that it was going to be about romantic relationships and about love and these two people realizing that they were meant for each other. And it really subverted my expectations in terms of how this movie was progressing and how it ended. And it made me rethink, going back to what I said, is there is no definitive way that makes a relationship, I guess, special in a way. Like, you can meet each other in so many different ways, and one can't be more valuable or more special than the other. But it seems like Arthur is kind of putting a label to it because, oh yeah, me and Nora, we don't have that sort of history with each other. We kind of met through a residency. But I can argue, yeah, but I feel like that's just as, like, you guys met each other doing what you're passionate about, and you guys ended up falling in love, and then that was that. But I think the significance and the importance of this scene is, I guess, to go to show, going back to, like, possibilities. I think the what ifs were just a way to list out all these things that could have been and to spark that excitement. But I think what this film is really doing is putting emphasis and showing the beauty of what was possible and what is going on in the current moment. And I think maybe sometimes we get up in our head, you know, getting lost in all these possibilities of what if this happened, what if I met this person, that we tend to lose focus and forget what is going on right now with the people that we're with the relationships that we've built. And so I think it was just a great way to kind of bring light to the present time and move us away from the past. Because it seems like, at least for me, you can't really see a lot of moments of chemistry almost, or like depth that goes on with Nora and Haesung. They literally meet, like I said, like 10, 12 years. But it seems like Haesung, he asks the same questions of like, what kind of prize do you want to win now? Right? Or like, you know, like, what have you been doing? He's been to the military and all that sort of stuff. So you can't really see what is, like, there's no progression with their dialogue. And I think that goes to show that they're both tied up in the past. I can't really tell. And one of the things that made me kind of confused is I don't really think that Haesung and Nora were truly and fully invested with who they've become as an adult, who they are, what they're doing. It seems that they're more pulling out what they've experienced in the past when they were 12 years old. And using that as like a foundation and trying to find that feeling of like nostalgia and like that old friendship. And so it was just a really interesting thing to see kind of how their dynamic is just going forward. But yeah, I mean, I hope that answered that question. This was a very interesting movie. And I think to wrap up, the ending was kind of the moment where I felt the sadness. And the way I interpreted it is when Nora ended up, you know, crying in Arthur's arms, I just kind of thought maybe this was when she realized that what she thought was, you know, that perfect romantic relationship isn't what she expected it to be. And maybe the fact that he's kind of in her life, like Haesung is in Nora's life kind of with a very big gap in between, but still in a way involved, gave her like that sense of hope almost of like, maybe this is something more than what we thought it was. But when he eventually left again, for whatever reason, that's when she realized, yeah, no, I don't think this is what I thought this relationship was. I don't think this is what I thought that you and me, you know, Haesung, what you meant to me or whatever, all that sort of stuff. So I think it was just it was a great way to end it. Very complex and kind of ambiguous at the same time. But I'm curious to know what you thought about the ending and kind of how you interpreted it.
Yeah, so I think the ending for me, I think it, for me, it drove home how much these two characters, I think you're right when you point out that they are in the past every time they get together. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that people create spaces, right? And so when they get together, they're literally like creating a space in which their own pasts can breathe, can come out and breathe. Because, like, you know, when Nora's married to a Jewish man, and a Jewish man she met later in her life, right? The beauty about childhood friends is that they were witnesses to your past self, right? And, you know, in Nora's conversation with Haesung, she says, like, I left that girl with you. And the fact that she cries at the end connects to the fact that in their first conversation over Skype, he's like, oh, you don't cry anymore. You don't cry anymore? And she's like, yeah, I stopped crying soon after I immigrated because I realized that no one cared.
Yeah.
But like in Korea, she was like crying. She'd cry all the time, yeah. Right? And so I don't know, maybe in a way that he kind of brings back that girl to her that she misses too, that she, you know, has lost this kind of connection with. And, you know, she says like, oh, that girl's not here in front of you. I don't know if I believe her.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's true. Like, yes, she's not that girl anymore. She's more than that girl now. But I think through Haesung, she had the space in which she could, when that part of her, that younger self of her, could be loved, you know, that were someone who has seen that younger version of her, who can see it still in her. And so this relationship becomes a space for that part of her that she kind of shut off to protect herself, for that part to receive love.
That's a very see, this is why I love doing movie reviews, is because that's a very interesting way. But I think I agree with you totally with your interpretation. I feel That kind of reminds me of the scene where when Arthur says that there's a part of you that I can't access. Mm-hmm. I think that ties back to what you said, is that what the beauty of childhood friends is that they are witnesses of parts that you possibly may have grown out of. But I think the fact that Nora was able to express herself with crying goes to show of what it is that was so special with her and Hesong, is that Hesong was able to bring that out on her, and kind of remind her that, you know, she can still be that young kid that, you know, can express herself. Because I do feel like that whole immigration process and her feeling almost like an outsider, you know, during her younger years, you know, going to a new place with new people, I think you do end up inevitably building yourself a wall to protect yourself. And I think Hesong was someone that she could just be totally vulnerable towards, despite the fact that Arthur is her romantic partner. And I think that's just what she missed, maybe. I don't really know.
I don't know if I think it's like more vulnerable necessarily. I don't think we get any indication. Like you said, we don't really get a lot of depth in their interactions. What we see of them really highlights the difficulties of long distance relationships, right? And the ways that the ebbs and flows of connection. But I'm sorry, why did I get onto the ebbs and flows of connection?
The vulnerability.
Oh, yes, the vulnerability. Yes. I think it's because there is a vulnerability that is inevitable with childhood friends, because they see that part of you that isn't usually visible, right? To an extent, they can see into you, right? Into your past. And so I think there's this level of forced vulnerability that happens when you confront, quote unquote, confront or face people from your past. Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I think we may have covered around 4% of the movie.
For real, this movie.
This is a very, very dense movie. There's so many avenues that you can take to with discussing it, but for the sake of time, we're going to have to stop here. But before we get off, I have a small segment that I love to do with my guests at the end of my interview. So I just brought up a couple random would you rather questions, a fun way to kind of take us out of our thoughts about the movie and the amount of depth that we kind of went into, and kind of ending it off on a easy creative note. So how this works is I'll give you a couple would you rathers, and all you need to do is just give me a fast response on which one you choose, and we'll just kind of go through that. Cool? All
right, sounds good.
All right, so would you rather have a pet dragon that can only breathe glitter, or a pet unicorn that can only speak in rhymes?
Dragon with glitter, please.
Okay.
Easy glitter application.
Interesting. Do you have a preference for dragons or unicorns, or was it the glitter that really intrigued you?
It was the glitter. But also, dragons can fly?
Yes. I would choose a dragon, too.
Yes.
Although, yeah, anyways. So, would you rather have a treehouse in the tallest tree in the world, or a secret underground hideout with a roller coaster?
Oh.
Oh, this one's a tough one for
that
me.
That sounds really hard.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say the roller coaster is not a selling point for me.
You're not good with rides?
I'm not good with rides.
I see.
But tallest tree in the world sounds hard to get to.
Let's say there's an elevator.
Oh, okay. You know what? Tallest tree in the world.
I mean, imagine the view.
Yeah.
Right? I'm assuming that the tallest tree is somewhere with like a magnificent view in front of you. All right. The next one is, would you rather have a talking toilet or a talking fridge?
Fridge. Talking toilet. Can you imagine at night?
I mean, in a way, I guess it would be a nice companion because I feel like you spend more time with the toilet.
True.
Than with a fridge.
But I want to be alone when I'm on the toilet.
Yeah, yeah. The privacy issues do arise.
Also, you were expelling yes. into the toilet. I don't know if I would feel comfortable with that.
That would be kind of weird. Okay, the last one is, would you rather have a magic van that can teleport you anywhere or a magic ring that makes any book you touch come to life?
Van.
A van.
I'll never be late again in my life.
Oh, that is true. Yes, that is absolutely true. All right, Rav, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you had some fun. And like I said, I hope that we've attempted to cover as much as we wanted, but I can't lie, there's a lot of things to unpack through this movie. But I had a lot of fun. Thank you for coming on. You were great. But that's it for you all today. That was our movie review on Past Lives. I highly recommend it. If you do end up watching it, you'll understand how difficult this episode was for how much we could have covered, but we couldn't. But yeah, that's it for today. I hope you guys enjoy the weather. Thank you again, Raph, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And I'll see you all next week. Bye-bye, everyone.